This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Leechwe Lin. Tonight, a look into what's actually going on with STEM education and careers.
So firstly, right, universities are saying that there aren't enough science students to fulfill their quotas, while science grads are saying that there aren't enough jobs in the market. So what's actually happening here? We look into the mismatch, and then after that, what are we doing in our schools? How can we be encouraging more of an interest in STEM?
Let us know. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It's 6:08, and our Inside Story today has taken a bit of an interesting route to get here. So yesterday in Dewan Rakyat, Education Minister Dato' Dr. Razzy Jidin said that the abolishing of the UPSR and PT3 will allow students to explore science, technology, engineering and math subjects or STEM subjects in a more natural way. And that the approach taken by the ministry was to further strengthen interest in these subjects from as early as the primary education level. This was in response to a supplementary question from Pasir Mas MP Ahmad Fadli Shari, who basically asked what strategies the ministry was taking to boost interest among students when it came to STEM. This, I think, comes from long-standing challenges in terms of how only 19% of our Form 4 students continued their studies in the science stream, which led to university quotas for science, for STEM subjects being unfulfilled. And so basically the question was, what's going on? What's being done?
And so, Sharmila, because you were not on our show yesterday, what happened was we opened that up to everyone, right? And the messages that came in were illuminating and actually not that much about what the minister said or even what the MP said, and really more to do with the larger pipeline of what a STEM career could look like. So a sampling of the messages that really got us thinking and have given birth in some ways to our show today. Iza called and said, as a science student from school all the way up to master's, it's not about difficulty. There aren't enough jobs. As a master's grad in chemistry, lab jobs practically have no room for progression. Another anonymous listener WhatsApped in, also chemist, chemist with a major in analytical chemistry, and talking about how the struggles are really there, particularly when it comes to salary, a starting salary of 1,800 ringgit, and saying that if we are going to encourage our students to go into STEM, the salary has to be competitive and enable them to survive. Anonymous also went on to say that looking for other opportunities, it's the salary question still sits at 2.5 to 3,000 ringgit. And that's really not what I thought someone who works in chemistry would earn. And if we think about what the living wage is supposed to be in KL, and I think more crucially, how we're not supposed to just be earning the living wage, I think that opens up a number of interesting and pertinent questions.
Because the assumption / stereotype is that if you make the decision to go into a STEM career, that you're basically making the financially sound choice, the one with career progression, the one with high salary, the one with perks and benefits. But, you know, the messages that we got really aren't bearing that out. So we have we had Wendy who messaged in saying, we need higher salaries. It's not enough to survive in Malaysia. I started as a science student. I graduated with biotech degree, but I realized how difficult it was to progress in terms of job development. And now I work in a totally different field. Boy says something very similar. I'm an engineer. I understand why it's happening. The science stream isn't easy. It also isn't accurate that it's pocket friendly. Some sacrifice a lot, but in Malaysia, it's still not a rewarding path.
So this is the thing, right? If we're going to talk about mismatches, that almost assumes that there just aren't enough people or there aren't enough jobs. Not necessarily that the jobs that exist in the market are undesirable or are not worth the amount of time and investment and money that you might have put into your education and that now you're not seeing returned in your chosen field. Meanwhile, Benji raises a whole separate point saying Malaysia continues its fascination with STEM, while locally there aren't opportunities for the volume of students we're churning out. We're import heavy on STEM-related jobs. The only boom was for jobs for anything related to COVID. So not enough jobs, but many applicants mean lower wages. We also continue to look down on jobs related to skill, 3D and artisanal fields. And then the influx of foreign workers filling that gap means that overall Malaysian wages won't ever rise because employers can just get cheap foreign labour. And then we wonder why the brain drain doesn't stop.
So we're going to try and unpack all of this in today's show. So first, we're going to look at it from what's happening in the industry. You know, what are the jobs that are available? Where is this mismatch coming from? And later, we're going to be looking at how our education system prepares people for a career in STEM. We'd like to hear from you. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, Executive Director of the Malaysian Biotechnology Information Centre. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about the a supposed mismatch between STEM graduates and the STEM industry in Malaysia. We'd like to hear from you. Are you in the field? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, the Executive Director at the Malaysian Biotechnology Information Centre. Dr. Maha, good to have you back with us.
Hi, Lynn and Sharmila. Always nice to be on BFM.
So to start us off, in 2019, the Higher Education Department DG, Datin Paduka Dr. Siti Hamizah Tapsir, announced that Malaysia needed 500,000 scientists and engineers by 2020. Harian Metro then released a report that said the country needs more science grads. So in response, science grads took to Twitter to say that there aren't enough positions available for them. What's your take on this? Is this true?
Okay, hope I'm not going to paint a beautiful picture, and I hope I'm also not going to give confusing and contradictory information, because both are true. But what I'm always perplexed is, where are these scientists needed? Where did they get this number? In which fields? And who is employing? Our universities, for example, are local, and then we also have foreign graduates coming back, are producing thousands of PhD graduates annually, and most of them are not rightfully employed in their fields. And there are many factors to this. There is a clear mismatch of talent and jobs. There are not enough employers who need these trained scientists. And those who are trained in the required fields do not have other skill sets. I don't see a growing industry or public research institute to expand our R&D and innovation. So with very little expansion taking place in the last few decades, and investment is very meager, so I not sure where this 500,000 scientists are in demand. And we invest less than 1.3% of our GDP in R&D. Singapore, for example, started Biopolis, and they have all, just name it, they've got all the big names, companies in science, technology there. And now they're starting Agropolis. So where are we in the light of the many global challenges that we are facing today? Now, the other problem is the basic science. You know, basic science like mathematics, chemistry, physics, genetics, these sciences. These are the foundation to all advanced sciences and technology. But where are the jobs for our graduates who studied this? So I'm not sure if I'm answering the questions. I'm asking questions back because I too need answers. Then the second part is the lack of skill sets among our graduates across boards. All areas in STEM and also probably non-STEM, they're not able to connect the dots. Very academic, lack soft skills. And I know personally employers who are also looking for quality, talented graduates, and it has been a challenge for them to fill many positions. So that's why I'm saying both are true. Our graduates will put in their CV excellent English proficiency, but when they start talking, we know they're far off. CVs are not outstanding at all, just basic statistics. Personal info. There is no initiatives among many of our graduates to attend programs outside the academic requirements. And many Malaysian students are timid, not very opinionated, lack general knowledge on global developments. So do you see the mismatch? I hope I made myself clear.
Yes. I mean, I think that there's so many factors there that it's going to be quite difficult to address them all. But I was hoping that before we proceed, that you could also give us an overview of sorts in terms of demand, right? Because the mismatch is there, but overall, what is the demand actually like in the STEM field when it comes to jobs and careers?
Probably there are more jobs in technology fields. As I said, basic sciences, we have many graduates in all our universities and they're going to find it difficult. I heard about those who, chemistry students, chemistry graduates. Yes, I can understand their hardship in getting a job. And that goes for mathematics as well. So technology fields like IT, engineering, I think there is a demand, but not in life sciences, not in biotechnology. I hope to say not yet. I really hope we pick up our actions and put our actions together.
Now, STEM, of course, stands for science, technology, engineering and maths. Which of these fields is seeing the largest decrease? What do you think is the cause behind that?
Now, this is also very difficult to pinpoint. In today's technology development, one can see that all fields, one should actually see all fields in a holistic manner. So those who did mathematics should not just see that they're going to be a mathematician, but also take up engineering position, which is possible. Or as market analyst at top, all those five top market analysis or accounting companies or the banks. Banks are looking for STEM graduates, but then they must have the transferable skills. So this is where I really cannot answer your question in a direct manner and just say these are the fields, these are not the fields. But then there's so many factors involved. And I also mentioned, all those lack of abilities among our students. So I still think if someone has done a course or degree in life sciences, which I can say there are not many opportunities, but if they are versatile enough, agile enough, then they will be able to find something, a job in either a field that's directly related. Like, look at me. I am a life science graduate, a biotechnology graduate, and I would say I'm now, or from the beginning, I was in a field that is not directly involved. I've never went into a lab after my graduation. But then I am in a field which is indirectly involved in science communication, in capacity building, regulations. So I still feel, students must be able to connect the dots to see which fields, they can apply their knowledge. So again, not a direct answer from me, Lynn and Sharmila.
So if I could follow that up then, what advice would you have for STEM grads who are now emerging with their degrees or their masters and finding that, okay, that there's not a lot out there for my direct skills? What advice would you have for them to pivot or upskill? How can they look for different opportunities?
Okay, when we're talking about upskilling, many graduates, what they do is they immediately get into postgraduate studies. So either a master's or even some very good, excellent results, they get into PhD studies. Now, my advice is don't do that, because then they will be going blindly into fields that's offered by universities without knowing what is the demand out there in the market. Is there a demand for that particular field? Or will they be, after graduating, can they still sustain their interest in that particular field? Because they're going into it blindly without knowing even about themselves, their career path, their career goals, their strengths and weaknesses, and the market demand. So upskilling is important. But start with maybe short courses or professional courses. Go out and work first. Find out, do a soul search about ourselves first. What do I like? What field will drive me? What's my passion? And also, what is the demand in the market? And then come back and do the postgraduate studies. So that is one of my advice. Now, the other one, while in the university, don't just be busy with assignments, quizzes, and exams. They have to, if they're doing sciences, now go and attend a seminar on economy. Go and attend a seminar on something else, which they might feel is a waste of time or not related, but then when they come out, they will be able to connect the dots. Economy or account, economy, agribusiness, and business management, and many other fields are all related to science when they are working in the real field. So I think students are too busy with chasing their grades that they are not seeing how all the others will come very handy when they come out to work.
So your centre offers internship placements for Malaysian undergrads in biological and life sciences. What kind of feedback are you hearing from them about their experiences and the opportunities available in the market?
So our centre, we offer internship, which is very different because we don't run a lab. We don't have we don't provide hands-on lab experience, but we expose them to soft skills. Because we are about outreach programs, we are about capacity building, and we work on all peripheral areas related to STEM. Funding, regulations, policies, business development, and even science communication. So with that exposure, they really come out as a different person. They have to create content which makes them, which requires them to do a lot of reading and research. Write a lot, and we offer a lot of networking opportunities. We take them out for meetings, and they meet industry partners, industry players, so they know which industry does what is required in particular in industry. And we also make them participate in international forums. Now, a lot of it is webinars, and we also have physical regional workshops that we organize here. Like this month, I'm organizing a gene editing workshop, so my interns will be attending that. So given that, they will be exposed to international settings and they learn the latest technologies and global challenges. So everyone who leaves Mavic after their internship, they're always transformed. And the lecturers who come and to evaluate them tell us that they cannot recognize their students anymore. So that is the feedback that we get.
And would you know how many of them go on to pursue full-time careers in STEM?
Many of them, because you know, once they're in Mavic, they are very much interested in the peripheral issues related to STEM. Some of them actually have gone to further their studies in postgraduate studies because given the exposure that we have given, then they were able to identify which area they want to zoom in. So they've gone to do their postgraduate studies. And others have gone into business development and the other areas, but many of them have stayed in STEM. So I can see that, you know, our interns mainly get into the peripheral related, indirectly related industries in science, which I think is really good.
Now, traditionally, right, STEM careers have been thought of as the financially secure and rewarding choice. Is this still true?
Well, again, not an easy answer. If our graduates are internationally competent and internationally competitive, and they are able to connect the dots with transferable skills, and they are up to date with current latest technology developments, I think they can still secure a job. Now, those days, I'll be very afraid to say go out and work beyond Malaysian shores. But today, I think that's not something that's unpatriotic. We need to plant Malaysian seeds everywhere so that our graduates are able to network, raise funds, collaborate, and then we can leverage by having a Malaysian somewhere else. So if our graduates are internationally competent, I think it is still a secure thing. Now, look at it this way, Eleni Sharmila. Science is actually the problem solver for all the problems that we had. How did we get out of the pandemic? Now, yes, it's still an epidemic. Yeah, we have got the subvariants, but then the vaccines are still proven to be efficient. So many other things, climate action, where is the solution coming from? It's coming from science. All the SDG, all the sustainable development goals, where are the solutions? It's coming from science. So science is going to be evergreen. It's going to be a sunrise industry. We need our graduates to be, you know, capable enough to look at the opportunities.
We have a couple of minutes left with you. What is the national impact of an insufficient STEM-related workforce?
Oh, well, I can't imagine a country without having science as a pillar. We will be technology borrowers. We will not we will lose our competitiveness, our ability to solve our own problems, because many of our problems are unique problems. The crop variety that we need, it's not what the major five companies are developing. We need different types of crops. So, you see, we have unique problems. So, it is going to be very pathetic if we lose our competitiveness in STEM. So, we really need to get our actions together. We need to invest more. We need to expand our research and development. We need to strengthen our public sector research. We need to bring in industry, foreign industries, like what Singapore is doing. So I think it's really important.
Dr. Maha, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Sharmila.
That was Dr. Mahalakshmi Arjunan, the Executive Director at the Malaysian Biotechnology Information Centre, helping us understand what's happening with the STEM industries, where the gaps are, where the demand is. After this, we'll be talking about education and how our students can be better prepared for careers in STEM. But let us know, are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, only on BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are talking about a mismatch between STEM education and STEM careers. And in a larger sense, issues with not having enough jobs, not getting paid enough. And so we'd like to hear from you. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, Twitter at BFM Radio. Before we move on to our next guest, we've got so many messages. I think we have time for a few.
So many messages from people who actually work in the field or in some cases have left. So Fazli says, I don't see the industry genuinely requiring skilled workers in science in large numbers. Universities already produce these large numbers of scientists and engineers in the past, but still larger numbers of these grads exit the specialization. IT, yes, very huge opportunities, but math, chemistry, physics, you end up becoming school teachers or educators and higher institutions, as there are compulsory courses to be taken by any applied sciences student. The way forward is we need more FDI towards high quality job creation, FDI related to the use of STEM workforce.
I like that idea of there needing to be a larger overarching policy level decision and policy level injection of funding as well. Although perhaps some would argue that we do actually invest quite a bit in our STEM fields.
Then in the right ways or not.
Ah.
So, you know, it's I guess it's where that investment is going, right? Because K. John raises a point saying it's hard to inspire the next generation of STEM experts when locals themselves don't appreciate innovation in the field. The ridicule that the flying car got is a prime example. The exact same idea has been brought to production just this year in Europe.
Perhaps with the flying car, it was a case of how it was presented to the public as well.
How and by who? I think you cannot ignore the public trust deficit, but otherwise, this is actually a really good point in terms of what actually inspires people to get started versus assuming that there's going to be some sort of natural call towards STEM.
Just to close off, at least on this side of things, Cindy says, I'm a lab scientist for 7 years before leaving the industry. The pay is really sad. We have to work around the clock during public holidays. There's another side to the story. I found out that there are a lot of masters or PhD grads who don't know why they studied that. Poor interpersonal skills. Some don't even know how to properly hold a pipette or speak or write in proper English in an email. And yet they expect high pay. This doesn't fit the market needs.
That is actually a point that's coming through in other messages as well. And something that our guest, Dr. Maha, raised earlier, which is soft skills, right? So it's both things. On the one hand, if pay is going to be low and working conditions are poor, who wants to do that? The flip side of that is if people are coming in without soft skills and an ability to work with others or to pivot or to do more than one thing, who wants to hire that person? So we started off saying mismatch. I think it's a probably rather fitting word.
Keep those thoughts coming. Are you in STEM? What are your experiences? And as we're going to move on to talk about education, how can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call us, tweet us, WhatsApp us. And now joining us is Kenneth Chai, co-founder of The Learning Curve, which is a STEM social enterprise. Kenneth, good to have you with us.
Glad to be back. I miss you guys.
Well, thank you for being back then. And yesterday in Parliament, Pasimas MP Ahmad Fadli Shari brought up the low number of students in the science stream and how this has led to the science stream quota in universities being unfulfilled. What do these numbers indicate about the interest of young people in taking up these subjects? Is this something you've been seeing as well?
Yes, definitely. Yes. The proportion of students studying in STEM, especially in public secondary schools, we don't have the data for the private one, has been declining. Yes. And the share of students pursuing a degree in STEM subjects has also been declining, especially after the 2000s.
So the education minister said that the removal of UPSR and PT3 will open up opportunities for students to learn STEM subjects in a more natural way, encourage early interest. I wanted to get your take on that. What do you make of this?
Well, to be honest, yes, I agree that it will open the opportunities. Okay, that part I agree, that for the students to choose to enter science streams. So these are the students otherwise denied the opportunities to do so due to their academic performance, right? Maybe they failed one or two subjects and they're not selected by their school. Not interest. So what's the question I want to ask is, what, I'm asking you that question, what's telling us that there may not be more students joining the arts and econ streams the other way? So we're trying to know whether there's a net movement towards science or towards econs. I personally think it's still going to be somewhat the same because this is not only exclusive to Malaysia, all over the world, especially in America, in the developed world, in EU, the interest in and the participation in science stream has been slowly declining. It's just that here we see it more drastically.
Now, I remember when I was in school, many of my classmates used to think that science subjects were intimidating. Do you think that's still the reputation that STEM subjects have today? And how does that affect how interested or open students are?
Yes, the subjects, especially during our time, were always intimidating because STEM subjects are analytical subjects, like it or not. So naturally, there are a lot of terms to remember, a lot of strict rules and formulas to follow, otherwise you fail. So hence, what happened over the past decades, these subjects were made easier. So a lot of the things that we were once forced to memorize are no longer in the syllabus. So everything has been broken down so that to address this thing that you just said, shouldn't be intimidating, it should be easy. So whether or not that's effective, personally as an educator, you know, you said we always enter the classroom said, you, during my time, it was a lot harder. So that's not helping as well, I know. Yeah.
Do you think the breaking down has resulted in ease? Well, I know we're using the word easier here in quite a loaded way, but do you think that it's resulted in these concepts at least being more accessible and understandable? Like, I'm just curious whether it has resulted in some net positives.
So this is where things are what we don't like, right? So just now I heard before I came in, you said that, you know, we are complaining that students don't know this, they can't hold a pipette. So this is the consequences right now. So we want to make it easier for them to come in. And if everything is easier, once they enter universities, lecturers are complaining. Once they enter the workforce, the industry is complaining. So at the end of the day, they are being paid less. So I think let's talk about economics right now. This is supply and demand, right? So if there's a lot of people doing a lot of things that are easier to be done, then the pay will be low. And like it or not, STEM subjects, actually, when people talk about STEM subjects, we keep thinking about biology, doctor, but the STEM also include technology and engineering. So if you can, if you have a welding certificate right now, you get paid double of an engineer fresh grad. So right now, if you know how to weld, you know how to operate a crane, you know how to cut steel, you probably get a 5-figure right off the bat. So these are STEM skills. It's just that these are STEM skills that are dirty and dangerous, and that's why the pay is high. So I think we should look at it more comprehensively rather than just the salary.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, right? Because our streaming process has also sort of created this mindset that only more academically accomplished students should go into STEM. Is that really the most effective way of encouraging more STEM participation?
No, I don't believe so. You know, as a STEM educator, I think I've been teaching in all the STEM classes for 7 years right now. So when I enter the STEM classroom, right, I have this one privilege because I'm not a teacher in that school. I am being contracted to teach in different schools, right? So I have this one privilege that other teachers don't. I don't know which class they are from once they're in my STEM lab. I don't know. I don't have that glasses, and I'm happy that I don't. And most often than not, at the end of the day, when I speak to the teacher, the students with average or below average academic results, they perform better. Of course, they are shy, but they perform better when it comes to, you know, you give them the opportunity. I think the reason people are saying that is because, you know, people from the front class, the teachers go in with the mindset already, these are my best students, I'm going to give them the best resources, I'm going to give them more attention. And then as they move on to the last class, the F class, they said, okay, there's no point of me being here saying anything because these students don't perform anyway. They don't listen anyway. So that mindset not only change how they teach, it also give a very bad aura. So as students come to me, the teacher, you come in here for 1 hour, you've spoken to me more than the entire year of my science teacher. Why? Because I know, I don't know which class you're from. To me, you're as good as the best student in this class. So I think this has to change. We cannot judge a student's passion and interest, what they're going to do with their life based on just, you know, some tests.
We'll continue our conversation with Kenneth after this. We're speaking about how our education system could be doing better when it comes to preparing our young people for a career in STEM. We are speaking with Kenneth Chai, co-founder of The Learning Curve, which is a STEM social enterprise. Keep those thoughts coming. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's 6:49. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're talking about preparing students better for careers in STEM. And we'd like to hear from you. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We're continuing our conversation with Kenneth Chai, co-founder of The Learning Curve, which is a STEM social enterprise. Kenneth, to pick up where we left off, when speaking to young people and encouraging them to pursue an education in STEM, what are some of the things that should be highlighted?
Usually, you know, I get this a lot of this question at from four, and especially after they get the SPM results, like what's next. So, like it or not, in Asia, we study what our parents want us to study. Right. So, you know, there are a lot of parents that, you know, go become a doctor, so you make a lot of money, go become an engineer. So I usually tell them genuinely, don't study because what your parents told you to do. Don't study because your friends are studying. If five of your friends are going to this school, then usually you want to study. These are peer pressure, right? So I want them to study it because, you know, study science because it answers the questions in your head. So study it because the answers, when you get it, makes you happy. And that's following a passion, not following an instruction. So yeah, so this is another thing that we need to address in Malaysia.
The messages that we've been getting, there's a little bit of a burnout from that passion part, though. You have messages from people who clearly went into science with a fair amount of passion, wanting to be a chemist, wanting to work in a lab, wanting to, you know, engage with the sciences, and then finding that there are all these other things that are contributing to them not being able to do that, whether it's not being able to get a job they want or the pay not being good enough. So I suppose my question is, along with encouraging that passion, you know, that leads to people choosing to do sciences, what else could be done to encourage people to stay?
You know, sometimes the thing that we learn in school, so I personally is an engineer, and then I pursue a master's degree in physics. So I think people think that, you know, the studying stops as soon as they graduate, and think that's not a right way to see it. I think it whatever we learn in college is only a stepping stone. So I think we should be always pursuing extra skills, because when I joined the oil and gas industry, I pursue something else as well. And right now I'm doing agriculture, as we talked about it before. So I think if you keep developing these extra skills, right, that will add your value. And if it's related, then you get appreciated in your industry as well. So I see a lot of successful people in among our peers right now who are doing really well are those that not only change the direction of their career, but they still do what they were. They studied. The foundation is there. It's just that they always acquire new skills along the way, be it management skills. Or, you know, if you're a chemist, you probably can take up mathematics. Like for me as an engineer, I take up a certificate in doing different things as well. So as you acquire all these skills, then your skills will translate into, you know, career rewards.
So what sorts of initiatives do we need on a policy level to boost interest for students to explore STEM-related subjects?
I'm glad you discussed about it. I think the government right now is focused heavily on upskilling, right? So that's exactly what I talk about. So after you graduate and you enter industry, and then we offer them upskilling certificates or diploma 1 year or 2 years based on the industry that they're in. So if in automotive industry, probably you learn how to operate a robotic arm. Things are not taught in school. So the ministry on the lower level are also revamping the syllabus to include more hands-on, outcome-based assignments right now. And science centers are being renovated to include more modern hands-on interactive centers. We are in talks with Pusat Sains Negara as well. And the National Science Week, Minggu Sains Negara, now focus more on practical activities. So no longer they do colouring and everything. They are showcasing different projects that are linked to the industries as well. They ask them, it's career-based. So right now, our activities for Minggu Sains are asking them, what do you want to be when you grow up? Why don't you become an astronaut right now if you want to be an astronaut? So it's extended until October, involve a lot of non-urban school. I myself is involved. So in Sarawak, we have 2 trucks deployed anywhere that turn into a science lab for 64 students. And the last campaign that reached out to, you know, different STEM communities were conducted in conjunction with what MOSTI has in mind for us. And these, I think, are the policies that should be expanded and well-funded. So not only we do not, not only we focus on, when we talk about all these policies, usually we are only addressing what's happening in the urban schools, right? So now we are outreaching to rural communities as well.
Kenneth, what final thoughts or message would you like to leave us with?
What do you think of science? Lynn? Like usually when I say STEM, science, what do you think it is? Is it a subject?
I mean, it's not a way of life. I do still think of it, I think, primarily as, yeah, subjects, specializations.
I talk to parents a lot sometimes when they're doing their assignments. So I really want people to see science, the first word in STEM, as a mean. It's not a subject. It's a means to find out why things happen and how. It's only natural for human to ask that. The first letter is science. And technology is just the tools that enables us to apply what we already know through engineering. So application of science. And finally, mathematics is a language that science, technology, and engineering communicates in. So if you see science and STEM in this way, right, it's just something that you want part of your life rather than whether I want to study it, I don't want to study it, I want to use it to in my career. So it's something that all of us is fulfilling our own curiosity.
Kenneth, thanks for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
That was Kenneth Chai, co-founder of The Learning Curve, which is a STEM social enterprise, speaking to us about what needs to be done to encourage an interest and a meaningful future career in STEM for our students. Let us know, are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have so many messages, I think we'll try and squeeze them in.
Let's start with Munif, who says a former education minister for the USA once said, and I quote, "There are two things that gets kids into science, dinosaurs and space." Bearing that in mind, that's why the American syllabus extensively features these elements. You have geoscience centers, dinosaur museums, space centers to ignite the imagination of students from a young age. These larger-than-life visuals would naturally make the kiddos gravitate towards pursuing a career in science, hook, line and sinker, though not all of them will be Neil Armstrong or Dr. Helen Grant. But by taking the bait of dinos in space from a young age, the syllabus produces scientists, chemists, oil and gas experts, engineers. On the contrary, science is not only marketed as troublesome, boring and difficult in our country. Our geoscience centres are absolutely abysmal. Literal mineral and archaeological displays put on kitchen-tiled floors. How do we even begin discussing igniting anyone's passion in science?
And to add on to that, my brother was a huge dinosaur nerd after Jurassic Park. And I think part of the challenge was also he was told repeatedly in school that you're not doing very well in science. I don't think this is something you can pursue. And then there wasn't also sort of a meaningful path that he could carry on. So I think I absolutely agree. We need a larger interest and ecosystem to encourage people to love science. But then there also needs to be more that people can take up.
Maybe love is a step too far. You know, I think building off of what Kenneth just said, maybe just getting people curious, because a lot of what this is, right, dinos and space, it's inherent curiosity. We always want to know what came before us and what might lie ahead. These are basic questions. And I think having great centres or books to encourage that curiosity that can then grow into an interest and subsequently into love, that's the pathway. But if you're not even curious,
yes,
or if you don't have anything to encourage the spark of curiosity, then what's the point?
We have Kamaru Nizam, echoing a point that our guest Kenneth made earlier as well, saying STEM workers in tech fields are hardly appreciated. Most will jump to management anyway because of the salary. So the real tech workers are those quote-unquote dropouts who have gone to vocational training. So STEM shouldn't be limited to those only taking the subject in Form 4 and Form 5. Those who take vocationals and life skills should also be categorized as STEM resources. I love the phrase STEM resources.
100% agree, 100% co-sign, and the next time somebody says something about quotas in universities, I will quote you, Cameron.
Keep those thoughts coming. Are you in STEM? What's your experience? How can we encourage more of an interest in science from a young age? You can call us 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll get back to your messages after this. There are plenty coming through. We've been talking about really a mismatch between education when it comes to STEM and what the career options are later. So keep those thoughts coming and keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.